Happy Easter, y'all. It's always a great reminder when I walk on this stage on Easter that the way we left it here on Good Friday night is not the way that it stayed or the way that it is this morning, because a lot happened in 3 days. I think on Easter, for whatever reason, I'm always led to think through my own faith and kind of just have some contemplative thoughts about where I'm at and what I believe. And, you know, I hear a lot of people use the phrase that I'm spiritual. They say that I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. And I think the fastest growing religion in America is not affiliated, or whatever the boxes that you check when you say that, you know, you don't affiliate with really any church, but yet 98% of Americans believe in God. And I think what people are really saying is that while they may believe that there's some sort of God out there somewhere, that they really don't want to affiliate with any kind of organized religion because they want to be free to believe what they want to believe without having somebody else's beliefs forced on them. And my guess is we probably have a significant number of people in this room who, you know, fit into that category. And here's what I would say to this, and this is all because I'm not like a real pastor, but I would say that, like, at the end of the day, like, if you have done the work and you figured it out, at the end of the day, you've landed on being an atheist, you know, God bless you, come to Westridge still, we'll be friends, we'll drink wine, I don't judge you for any of that. I think it's a very complicated thing out there. But I think what most people do is they just, like, ignore it. You just, like, sweep it under the rug and you don't think about it. And it's kind of like you roll the dice about your future. And, you know, we spend so much time figuring out our lives when we have all of eternity that we have to figure out. And so I would just ask that you would spend the time to really critically think through, what are your beliefs? What's your faith? What do you think is going to happen when we die? What do you actually believe in? And then here's what I would also ask you, which I think is a really important question, is what are your beliefs based on? Everybody has a worldview, which is to say that the definition is a framework of ideas and beliefs through which an individual interprets and navigates the world and relates to it. I would say, it really put simply, it's the lens through which we see the world. And so some of us see the world through our job or our business, and our identity is really wrapped up in our profession. Some see the world through the lens of wanting to achieve money, power, prestige. And then still others want a simple life where they see kind of life through the lens of family and kids and parenting. Whatever it is for you, we all have a worldview that ultimately dictates how we live. In other words, your worldview determines your approach to life, what you want to accomplish. And ultimately, it changes where we want to see the outcome. What's the end game as we leave this world? What is it that we want to leave behind? And the one belief, this is like super important, the one belief that shapes a Christian's worldview more than any other is the belief in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Everything we believe hinges on that one thing. For if you believe that Jesus was raised from the dead, you can't help but allow that belief to define how it is that you're going to live out the rest of your days. If we believe that Jesus really did conquer death, then anything is possible. Even a life that goes beyond the realms of this world. A life that will one day be this incredible adventure that will go way beyond anything we could possibly imagine. So through the years, there have been a lot of people who have attempted to explain away and really disprove the truth of the resurrection in an effort to convince everybody else that it's not true. And it always boggles my mind a little bit that people try to take these positions to try to prove their own position against somebody else's position. And a lot of people want their beliefs to be true, which is the fact that they believe that the resurrection didn't happen, and so they want everybody else to believe that. And yet, the Christian faith has remained the largest religion in the world, and somehow, some way, the belief in raising Jesus from the dead has stood the test of time for some 2,000 years ago. And so I thought what might be an interesting approach to today to do something different for Easter is to look at a story that often gets overlooked in the Bible because of the resurrection story. This is kind of like a little B-side to the resurrection story that we don't often talk about. But it talks about how a few groups of people who had a vested interest in making sure that the story of the resurrection of Jesus would never see the light of day, and they did everything they could to squash it before it ever got out. And so this morning we're going to be in the Gospel of Matthew, chapters 27 and 28. And so just to begin, it says, after Jesus died, Joseph of Arimathea, so this is verse 59, Joseph of Arimathea took the body, wrapped it in a clean linen cloth, and placed it in his own new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled this big stone in front of the entrance of the tomb, and then he went away. The next day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate, and they said, "Sir, we remember that while he was still alive, this deceiver," meaning Jesus, "said, after 3 days, I'm going to rise again. And so give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell people that it has been raised from the dead, and this last deception would be worse than the first." So you have the chief priests, who are made up of the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and they're nervous. They're nervous because they feel like they finally killed Jesus, right? This guy who's been driving them nuts and has really been a threat to their positions. They finally got him dead, and they don't want to deal with him anymore, and they certainly don't want to perpetuate some myth that he raised from the dead, and so they don't want the disciples to come in and steal the body so that this kind of thing can happen. These guys, even though they're Jewish, the government at the time is controlled by the Roman government, and so even though they're very prestigious leaders of the Jewish people, they still are subject to the Roman officials. And so they have to go to Pilate, who is the Roman governor who sentenced Jesus to death, the same guy who washed his hands of his innocence. And notice that they call him sir. Now, I know that what we read about the Pharisees and Sadducees is they're very arrogant dudes. And so to go to this Roman official and have to, like, call him sir, I'm sure was just beneath them that they had to play politics to get what they wanted, but they did it. And so they say, "Sir, this would be a bad day for all of us if the body of Jesus gets stolen." I mean, can you imagine if all of a sudden everyone believes in this crazy prophecy that Jesus stated that he would be raised on the third day? And notice while they call Pilate sir, they refer to Jesus as the deceiver. And they said, if this happens, we're all going to have problems here. There's going to be a great uprising that we all, you and us, had him put to death. So let's help each other out here and make sure this doesn't happen. So Pilate obviously understands the implication of what these chief priests are telling him because he agrees. And he says, okay, take some guards, put them on the tomb, go to the tomb, make it as secure as you know how. And so they went out, they made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guards. So Pilate grants their request, and now they have basically tripled their security on the body of Jesus, who's laying in a tomb. There was this huge stone that was rolled in front of the tomb, and then they put the Roman seal, which is a wax seal, that went over the stone, and the law was at that time that if you break that seal, you will be killed, because it had the Roman seal right in it. And so that would mean certain death. And then the final measure was to post guards at the entrance to the tomb to ensure that Jesus, sure enough, wasn't getting out of there, dead or alive. However, I don't think that anybody could have ever anticipated what happened next, because it came out of left field. And in Matthew chapter 28, it says, at dawn, on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. And there was a violent earthquake. For an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, he rolled back the stone and he sat on it. His appearance was like lightning. His clothes were as white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. And so the angel said to the women, while the guards are like frozen, shaking like dead men, and he says, "Hey, don't be afraid. I know you're looking for Jesus, who was crucified, but he's not here anymore. He is risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay." I mean, if you can't believe an angel that's all translucent, looking like lightning and whatnot, who can you believe, right? But it's so unbelievable that even the angel knows that it's unbelievable, and so he invites the ladies to come into the tomb and to see for themselves that where the body of Jesus once was is no longer. He is not there. He is risen. Do you have a hard time believing that? Like in your heart, can you get behind the fact that Jesus really did raise from the dead? I mean, if you're honest, I'm going to guess you had to question it at some point, didn't you? I'm a skeptic, so I've questioned it. I've secretly asked the question, wow, what if he really didn't rise from the dead? What if it's really not true? Where does that put us? That's a pretty tough spot. I mean, I'd have liked to have seen the angel for myself, right? I'd have liked to have seen the tomb, the stone rolled away. I'd like to have been able to walk into the tomb. I'd like to have been able to see the place where Jesus was with my own eyes. So, I mean, I would like some proof. That would have been nice. So since we don't have it, some 2,000 years ago, I guess the question is, can you find the strength to believe it? Like, can you find the faith to believe that Jesus really did truly rise from the dead? And if you can believe that, here's what I'm telling you. It changes everything. It wakes up the whole spiritual side to your life. And our worldview gets bigger than just this three-dimensional world that we can see and hear and touch, because all of a sudden, your worldview becomes otherworldly. When you realize that Jesus really did raise from the dead, then anything's possible. Well, it goes on in verse 11, it says, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests. Now, I find this interesting that they're Roman guards, and instead of going back to their bosses, the Roman government, to report back, they go to the chief priests. I think it's because they're trying to cover their butts here, and they know that the chief priests are going to be an advocate for them to help them figure out what to do. But they reported everything that had happened, and the chief priests had met with the elders. They came up with a plan. Notice that it says some of the guards go and make a report. My guess is some of them maybe potentially hightailed it out of there because they knew they lost the body of Jesus and they're going to be in trouble. They had one job. And so some of the guards go back, but they report not to the Romans, but to the religious leaders. Now, what you need to know is that the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who were the religious leaders that we're talking about, they didn't much like each other. They didn't get along. They didn't agree on anything. And so if they're coming together, they're coming together in an official capacity called the Sanhedrin, which is made up of the most elite of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And we'll just say that that is like our Senate, all right? And so for the Sadducees and the Pharisees to agree on anything, it's like our Republicans and Democrats to actually agree on something and actually get something done. And this is a clear case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Because Jesus is the enemy of both the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and they're coming together to figure it out. But here's the part that kills me. They aren't coming together and agreeing that they were wrong, like, oh, wow, Jesus raised from the dead. We're going to be in big trouble. These are supposed to be religious leaders who believe in God, who are leading the people of God, and they are receiving this report about Jesus raising from the dead from a credible group of people. I mean, believe me when I say these Roman soldiers had no incentive to like make this stuff up about earthquakes and angels and being raised from the dead. If I'm a religious leader and I hear that, I'm going to say, wow, maybe I was wrong, and I'm going to go investigate and see if it's true. In fact, let's go see for ourselves. But they don't do any of that. They go into covering their butt mode, and instead of, you know, trying to figure out what happened, their first instinct was to do a cover-up. They didn't want this Christianity thing to take off. They knew how much they would be in trouble if the resurrection of Jesus theory went viral. There would be this uprising from the people that these religious leaders had actually killed the Messiah that generations of Israelites had been waiting on for forever, which was the very hope of Israel, and they had him put to death. And so in an effort to protect their skin, they come together and they devise a plan. And here's what they decide to do. In verses 12 through 14, first of all, they give the soldiers a large sum of money. And then they tell them, here's what you're going to say. You're going to say, his disciples came during the night and stole the body while you were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, don't worry. We'll satisfy him and we'll keep you out of trouble. Is that not incredible? That sounds like Chicago politics right there. So you have to believe that the guards were playing this scenario out in their heads, and they're thinking to themselves, okay, do we go to Governor Pilate and tell him that we lost the body of Jesus, but it wasn't our fault? There was like this huge earthquake, and this angel came in, and the stone was rolled away, and poof, all of a sudden, Jesus' body is gone. Right? I mean, they would look ridiculous. So they know that if they go and tell Pilate this, probably they're going to be lined up and killed for dereliction of duty for losing the body. They had one job, and they lost the body of Jesus. So this story is so preposterous for them to tell anybody. So when the Sanhedrin comes to them and says, hey, we have a plan that's going to save your rear ends, the guards pay attention. And now all of a sudden, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes, and these Roman guards, all of a sudden, all of their interests are aligned. Talk about strange bedfellows. But they're all aligned, and they say, here's the plan. And it's a three-point plan. First of all, we're going to give you a large sum of money. So no matter what happens, you know that you and your family will be taken care of. Secondly, we're going to give you a more plausible story because yours is so crazy. So we're just going to say that you fell asleep on the job and the disciples were able to sneak in and steal the body of Jesus. And then the third one is this. When the story makes it back to Pilate, we're going to get your back. We're going to make sure that we give your story credibility, and we're going to tell them that what you said is true so that you won't get into any trouble. Considering the situation, that's a pretty sweet deal for these Roman guards, isn't it? And so in verse 15, it says, I'm interpreting the Bible here, it's a no-brainer. So the soldiers took the money, and they did as they were instructed, and this story has been widely circulated among Jews to this very day. Wow. Unbelievable. Well, thank God their plan didn't work. And most people didn't believe the stories that the soldiers told that day about how Jesus' body came up missing. I mean, a lot of people were just listening to their story and going, okay, let me get this straight. There was an entire regiment of guards that were standing guard in front of this tomb, and you only had to be there for 3 days. And y'all fell asleep at the exact same time. And some fisherman from Galilee waltzed through this military camp, They broke the Roman seal, knowing what would happen. They rolled away the stone. They walked into the tomb. They grabbed the body of Jesus. They picked it up. They walked out of the tomb with the body of Jesus and got away undetected. All the while, all y'all are fast asleep. Is that what you're trying to tell me? It is way easier to believe in a resurrected Jesus than that. Try as they may, they could not squash the truth. And because of that, billions of people for generations have come to believe in a resurrected Jesus. The resurrection of Jesus is not only a threat to those religious leaders, but the resurrection of Jesus really is a threat to you and me. You see, Easter makes Jesus downright dangerous. Because he's not dead, buried, and out of my way anymore. I can not for any longer keep my eye on him nailed to the cross as the helpless man trying to gasp for his last breath. Easter means you can't help but get the feeling that he's out there somewhere and he's watching. And he knows. He knows my deepest thoughts. And he can see into the darkest part of my heart, and there's no hiding from him. Easter makes Jesus dangerous because we know that one day we will have to stand before him, and we won't be able to stand. We will be kneeling in front of him. If our worldview is that we believe in the resurrection of Jesus, it changes our worldview. It changes what we see as being possible, because if we believe that he has conquered death, then we also have to believe that there is a life when this one ends. And if we believe that, then you have to believe that what we do in this life matters. The decisions that we make, the beliefs that we choose to believe in, how we live in this world, it matters. An Easter worldview changes the way that we go to work. It changes what we work for. It changes the way that we treat our husband or wife. It changes what we prioritize as teaching our children as being the most important things. It changes what we dream about and what we strive for. It drives our sense of purpose and mission and pushes us to understand what is the end game. What is it that we're trying to achieve on that last day of our lives? And we look back, what is the legacy that we have left behind? If we believe in a resurrected Jesus, it even changes the way that we pray. Because if we believe that Jesus can actually, truly be raised from the dead, then anything is really possible and miracles really can happen. Ask yourself, in your heart of hearts, what is it that you really believe about this Jesus who's been raised from the dead? Can you find the strength this morning to walk past the stone that was rolled away, to walk into that tomb and to look into that place where he was and know that he is not there anymore? Can we find the strength to believe those three words that angel spoke on that very first Easter morning that changes everything about the way that we live our lives when he said those words? He is risen.